Again for coming, everyone. Does anybody have any questions?
I've got two questions. The first one is, I wonder if any women had actually been taken as prisoners in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, and detained. The films seem to show only males, either men and boys. The second question is, sorry, I've forgotten the name already, the gentleman from Guantanamo.
Omar, sorry.
Yeah. I'm very harmful, but thank you very much for him. I'm just wondering whether since your return, since your release, whether you were offered any kind of support in helping you to deal with the physical and psychological effects of the torture.
There isn't a system where support, probably like institutions or something like that. When you come out, the government will offer you. But there are so many people who were sympathized when we were in prison. They campaigned for us in Brighton, for example, Save Omar campaigns, and Friends of Omar. And then we had lots of people in London and throughout the country, really. And they helped a lot, and they offered us help, and they had through their own connections. They knew, for example, doctors, everyone had some connection of some sort who did help. Like Professor Koppelman, for example, there's Helen Bamber's organization. There was mainly, really, our lawyers themselves were so kind that they were, their work was not only extraordinary in campaigning and working for us when we were in prison, and the work they did to make, for example, my case, until 2003, nobody knew who Omar the guy was, or even if he existed. Until Clive Smith, my family told me, came out, and he sat down with my family, and he said, if the way, because my family was so frightened to speak about anything, to even to tell people that they have somebody, a member of the family, locked up in Guantanamo. That's how the atmosphere was, the Islamic phobia and the scare, that they were frightened to speak about it in public. And the first thing Clive Smith did with them was sat down with them and said, if you continue to do this, you know, Omar would just continue to be locked up in prison. The Foreign Office and the government can care the less. They prefer it to be silent. But I think he said the best thing you can do for him, to help him, is to come out in public and speak on television and campaign to embarrass the government. He always says you have to embarrass the bastards to do the best, to do the right thing, which is, the politicians are like that. If you don't embarrass them, they can care the less, keep it behind their backs. So he said you have to embarrass the government to do the right thing, which they should interfere and should, because they made use of Guantanamo from the beginning, like what I said in the film. They made use of Guantanamo. The security service came as early as when we picked up in Pakistan. The UK government's intelligence service came and they interrogated and made use of the facilities. They came again in Bagram base, nearly three times in Bagram base, once in Pakistan, and then about four or five times in Guantanamo. And I remember one stage asking him to give my salam and give my regards to my family. He said, I can't do anything, I can't even tell them I've met you inside. So it was convenient for them to come down and interrogate, but they can't give any mess. So because of that, the campaign, and he asked them to go public, and which they did. 2003, they went on television and they spoke to people, and that's how things were picked up in Brighton, and they created, people supported them, and they started like that. And because of that work, Guantanamo has become what it was. And so I say, there are contacts, and the lawyers, these lawyers who worked, Clive Smith, Gareth Pierce, Berenberg Pierce, company. They, when we were released, in all, as I say, they worked tremendously and outstandingly when we were in prison. But even so, when we were released, not only did they take us and help us legal cases inside this country where we had faced lots of problems in the beginning. We weren't offered, our residency was taken away from us. We had to face about three cases of all sorts of stuff, immigration case, and then another case was, we were locked up for interrogation by the, terrorism in Paddington Station. We had all sorts of stuff. The Spanish government had a case against me saying that they wanted me to be extradited, even though when I was in prison, we agreed to go to Spain because it was a relief that Spain wants us to be extradited to Spain. We had We were willing to go to Spain, but they didn't want us then. But when we were released, they started to ask for our extradition. So there were lots of complications on the legal side of things. But even more so, that they acted and helped us in the sense of, through their own communication, they worked like more than lawyers, they like social service, which is really a good thing of them. Like, that's why I always, they deserve every praise. I mean, the Gareth Pearce office and Clive's and others who worked like that, they helped so much. They went out of their way, they didn't do only the legal work. We kept phoning them for all sorts of stuff. We need this, we want this, we can't find this. And they went out of their way to put us through, to find people, to speak to people, even though we weren't funded. So they spoke through their own channels. They spoke to doctors and so on to meet us without any funds. So that helped a lot, as I say. So the friends and family, obviously, family members, some of us who had families. Because I remember, for example, Abdel Nour Seymour, is Algerian. Three of us were released at the same day, me and Jamil Benna and this man who came originally from Algeria. He didn't have any big family, he had only his brother here. And I remember how his life was really, really difficult, more so than all of us. Because all of us had family of some sort, we did have help. Because we didn't have any money, nothing, we weren't allowed to take any, not like what you hear in the media where they say the taxpayer are paying for this, the taxpayer. We weren't allowed to have anything. So we had to be supported by our families. This man, his brother couldn't support him. He had a small room which looked like another cell. When he came out, and I went to visit him, and it was an awful place to be. And he had an injury in his leg that he wasn't treated for in Guantanamo because it was used against him in interrogation. And here again, he wasn't allowed to be treated because he didn't have any funds. He wasn't in the system. Nobody wanted to do anything with him. And he had lots of problems like that. And you can see how that built and caused him more depression. And he sometimes would have thought that going back to Montana was a lot easier than living in this kind of condition. So it all depended on each person is different. It's all to do with family, friends, connections, you know, and that helped a lot. But many of us who didn't have that had lots of problems. They were severely depressed. Their conditions got worse and worse, and even worse so if they were released to a country like Chad, which did happen. A young boy of 15 was released after 7 years to Chad without any connection. His family was in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi didn't want to take him back because he was a Chadian national. So he was released to Chad, or he was released to Morocco, or released to a European country. Sometimes he's locked up. So it was different from one place to another. Yeah, so it was hard. Yeah, that's the first bit. But the other question, you know, probably Andy would speak about, but I wanted to mention about locking up women. I remember some of us had their wives locked up with them. Even myself, when I first was taken to prison in Pakistan, my wife was under arrest herself, and she was locked up. But she was a lot better than those who came afterwards. She was arrested and she was put under house arrest. And they had female guards, she told me, for a time. But other people who came afterwards, like Abu Jafar from Mauritania, he was married to an Indian wife in Pakistan, and he said how it was so awful for them, how they were, both of them were locked up in the same cell in Pakistan. And I came to the lockups when I was locked up in, where was it? That was in Islamabad. And they described to me somebody just previous than I was locked up in that cell with his wife, another guy. Another person I know, his name is Abu Rahman. He's still locked up in prison now. And he described to us how he was locked up, his wife was locked up, and they had a small child of, I think, 1 year old or 2 years old. He was also with them in prison. And he told us about the story when he would ask the guards to bring his child, because they weren't locked up in the same cell, so he asked the guards to bring his child to him to see him. And he told us about a story where he was lying down in that cell and he had the small child. The child, not realized, he was playing, he was sitting down on his chest and playing. And he thought about their condition and he wept, you know, his eyes came down. And then the child just made a signature to him. He was a small child, he did a sign like that. And he was very comforted by that sign. It meant something to him. In Islam, it meant something. So he said when he saw that, he gave him some comfort. But he can remember how hard and sometimes embarrassing and hard and degrading and you know, you feel you're helpless, you can't do anything, you can't help your own family. You are threatened. Your family, you're threatened by your family that they will do them harm, sexually abuse them. And this is really, really the worst of fears that might happen to anyone in prison. Maybe Andy wants to speak about Afia.
Well, I'll speak very briefly, but Omar's feeling very talkative tonight, so I don't want to impinge on his time. Omar and I both got to be out of here exactly at 8:30 to get back to London and to Brighton. But the woman, the most famous female prisoner in the war on terror, and Omar's right, there have been many women held in Pakistan. There were women and children, pregnant women, babies held when the Americans went into the Somalia area. They were holding people in Kenya and then moved them to Ethiopia in 2007. As far as I know, there were no women held at Guantanamo. There have been rumours, and it is possible that at one point when there was a secret CIA prison within Guantanamo for a six-month period, that that one particular woman could have been held there. She's Afia Siddiqui. And I have, we've actually got a kind of campaign stall going on here. We've got loads of leaflets. But some of these leaflets are about Afia Siddiqui. I don't want to really do the story in much depth because I encourage you to take the leaflet and a postcard you can send to her. But she, we think, was held in a secret CIA prison for 5 years, but the Americans claim that she wasn't. They claim that she mysteriously appeared in Afghanistan in July 2008, tried to shoot two US soldiers, failed, was then shot herself. She was then rendered to the United States and put on trial for attempted murder, and in September this year was given an 86-year sentence, prison sentence, which she's serving in a place called Carswell in Texas, which is the notorious psychiatric prison for women, where apparently 100 of the inmates have died in the last 10 years, and the place has a notorious reputation for rape and abuse. A really horrible story. There are attempts, and I don't know how successful they'll be, in the Pakistani government to try and get her repatriated, but in the meantime, there are postcards here to send to her in this vile Carswell psychiatric prison in Texas, and I would encourage people to write, because as Omar will be able to say, when you're being held in a place where the people are doing vile things and don't want anybody to know about it, the worst thing for them is to hear that the outside world is watching. It really is. So there's a leaflet here that tells more of her story, and also this postcard that can be sent to her. And we have...
postcards to send to William Hague about Shaka's release.
Well, while we're on that, yeah, because you've seen Shaka Armour in the film and Shaka Armour is still held, there is a pre-printed postcard to send to William Hague, the Foreign Secretary, to urge him to keep asking his American counterparts why this man is not back in the UK, as he has been cleared for release since 2007, as he's part of the financial settlement that was recently reached with all the former prisoners, and he can't really finalise that while he's held in Guantanamo. There's a Metropolitan Police investigation into his claims that he was tortured in US custody in Afghanistan before Guantanamo, and the British agents were present in the room. That can't conclude without him being here. And you may know that David Cameron reached this settlement with the former prisoners to stop a civil claim for damages, which was ongoing. It was revealing some very, very damaging information about the government. And his point was that he wants to start a judicial inquiry to draw a line under affairs, which will be led by a judge who was formerly responsible for overseeing the intelligence services during these dark years. But this inquiry can't start without the man who needs to give evidence, which is Shaka Armour, being present in the country. So if you care about the story of this man that you've seen in this film, now is the time to write and write and write again to the government saying, you have run out of excuses. This man needs to be here now. So there's a card that you can come and collect to send to William Hague. And there are also a couple of other variations. There's two
cards
types.
To send Shaka.
These are cards you can send to Guantanamo, to send to Shaka in Guantanamo. I think there's other stuff, but we'll take some more questions if you have.
In Afia Siddiqui's case, I mean, it's important to say that two people have saw her in Bagram days. The Americans are denying that they had her in prison at that time. but two people met her inside Bagram base. Binyam, who came not recently now, it's been what, 1 year, 2 years, released. And when he was shown her picture, he said, "This is the woman I saw in Bagram base, which is Afia." And then I met someone else in prison. His name is Hassan Attas. He's a young Jordanian, young Yemeni boy who was rendered to Jordan, tortured in Jordan, and then he was sent back to Bagram, and then eventually he came to Guantanamo, where I saw him and met him. He and his brother are both in Guantanamo Bay, and he described to me a woman which I think is Afia Siddiqui, because it's the same woman that Binyam have said is Afia Siddiqui. And so both of them have seen Afia Siddiqui in prison at the time where the Americans are denying that they had her in lockups. So that's important, I think.
Will this film be shown on television?
Well, that's a... We sent it to the BBC and to the head of documentary, and the response was... it's a strong film, but it's just not the kind of thing we show on television. It's not the style. No. It's not got voiceover.
Should do well in film festivals, they said.
We sent it to Al Jazeera, and the same thing came back from them. It's just not our style. They actually used the word style. And they also said that the BBC had just made a film about Guantanamo Bay that was headed by Michael Portillo,
yes.
A well-known human rights champion.
It is quite funny, really. I mean, I hope that you appreciated the intensity of the people speaking without any frills, because that's what we liked about the film. One reason that it was like that was because we didn't have much money to make it, but my style, preferentially, would be not to insult the viewer, and that's what we set out not to do. And I think that a lot of the power of some of the testimony in it from Omar in particular is that we didn't mess about. There isn't that synth track that you get on films that involve torture, you know. And there isn't, you know, some famous celebrity doing a voiceover, and there aren't cutaway shots of Omar walking on the beach for some reason. You know, we kept you focused on what people were saying, and I think it's much more powerful. I've watched a lot of the approved documentary style films that the power in it is diluted by all the distractions that you get from the orthodoxy. So it doesn't look like...
We have tried, and we'll keep on trying.
Actually, two questions for Omar. You did mention that the British, the service agents or the authority met you in Bagram as well as in other places. After the release, do you blame the British government for knowing that a British citizen was in Bagram and kept you there, didn't try hard enough to get you back? Could you be blaming the British government? Secondly, what are your views on the US government or the US as a whole after your release now, going through the torture?
Our blame to the UK government is not because they didn't interfere to help us out to be released from Guantanamo only, but mainly it was for their collusion and what they contributed. Like, if you speak to Muslim, and most of us really, he will tell you, like, I believe completely and certainly if it wasn't for the British involvement, I was never to end up in Guantanamo. It's the same with my case. I mean, the people who brought up all the allegations that made me taken to Guantanamo. First time I ever heard about being in Chechnya was through the MI5, because all this has been proven, it was another person, it wasn't me. But the first time I ever heard those allegations was through the MI5, who came in Bagram base, and they said, "Listen, we have a videotape of you being in Chechnya." And the first time I ever heard about anything about Spain, and I went to a trip for 1 week to Spain, it was a holiday where I went to one beach resort to another. The first time I ever heard anything about Spain was through the British intelligence service, again in Bagram. The first time I ever heard about scuba diving, I did some training in scuba diving in Brighton Lido, it's a swimming pool. They brought that as really serious, dangerous allegations. That was the first ever I heard about that. It was from a British intelligence service in Guantanamo Bay itself. But since he brought that allegation, I've been dragged for 1 year by the American intelligence, or not so intelligence as Mother would say, I was dragged for 1 year being asked questions about scuba diving, and they were showed all kinds of pictures and mines and serious scuba diving people, military scuba diving, and saying which one did you train on and which one did you recognize. It was like, yes, it was because of that British intelligence. So our case, which was brought against the British government, was to do with their involvement, the information they fed. It's how actively, like Andy was saying, the case itself revealed how much Tony Blair himself interfered and Jack Straw interfered to bring some of us to Guantanamo Bay, because it was the most convenient way to interrogate us without any laws, outside the law. So it was all, and we were told so by the interrogators, the American interrogators, even in Guantanamo Bay. They say, you keep praising and saying so much about, singing about, you know, how the UK government and the Dangerous Service are more clever, and they were, let me show you what they've said about you, you know, why you are here in the first place. And this went on and on. So it was more than just, you know, we wanted the government to interfere to get us out of there, but they were the reason that we were in Guantanamo Bay. But again, I do not think they are only solely the main causes of all these crimes. It was the US government that caused these crimes against us. It was the US government who really captured us in the first place, with the Pakistanis obviously sold us. It was the US and the Pakistani government jointly who tortured us in Pakistan first, and then in Bagram, and then ended up in Guantanamo, who committed all these things that they shouldn't have done. And even today, I mean, we have space to speak about and to campaign and to bring a case against the British government. While when we did the same thing in the United States, it wasn't impossible. We didn't succeed with any case in the United States. It was just dropped silently. Pressure was put on top of really famous lawyers to just drop our case. The same when we had a case in Spain against the same person, who Garzon, who wanted to extradite us, then turned completely around and he took our case. We authorized him to take a case against George Bush and Dick Cheney and the other lawyers who helped and legalized torture. He took a case against the US government, to ask for extradition of those people to be trialed in Spain for war crimes. And what happened is that they put so much pressure against the Spanish government that they have stopped those. It was a very big case in Spain at the time, and they stopped it only recently through the leaks that came out from WikiLeaks. They said one of the letters was sent from the Spanish embassy, US Spanish embassy, and they were saying how much successful, boasting about how much successful they were about putting pressure on the Spanish government to drop this case, and they stopped the case. Now this case has been stopped, and the same man, Garzon, who took up this case is facing charges in Spain for very old things that he'd committed, corruption and stuff like that. So this is how it is still going on. I mean, the US government is still difficult to bring any accountability in the US. It's still very more difficult even than here. In the UK, we have more platforms, we have reached more better understanding and exposing the crimes that have been committed, maybe more than any other country, really. And this is something, it's an advantage to this country's policies, atmosphere, establishment, so. But this is what I feel about this. About the American, you said, what do you feel towards the American government? It's like any other people, like any other, you know, country. I mean, you have bad people and good people everywhere. I mean, we had lots of Americans who've campaigned for us, like these lawyers I've described. There were many American lawyers who campaigned. There are people who've objected to what was going on in America. I met, and I still meet, many people who are interested to put a lot of pressure on the Bush government, the previously Bush government, and want to expose. They are Americans. I want to expose the illegality that went on, and they disagree completely with what went on in Guantanamo. And I've met professors, law professors, who came, and the first, I think, donation we received we set up an organization called Guantanamo Justice Center to help welfare and bring legal cases against people who committed these crimes, and then we welfare for those people who were released. And the first donation we got in our when we set up our center was an American lady professor who came to Brighton, and she was writing a book about music torture. She's from New York, And she was the first person to donate amount of money to our organization. So it's people. I mean, you cannot. It's wrong. That's why we say this Islamic phobia thing. It's wrong to categorize all the Irish, all the Muslim, all the black people as bad or good. It's people are people, and you have good and bad in every country and every people. Are we good for time? Or?
One of the difficulties, though, of course, though, is that you know no released Guantanamo prisoner is allowed to set foot on the US mainland, just as no cleared Guantanamo prisoner is allowed to be rehoused there by the country that was primarily responsible for everything that happened to them, which is a pretty depressing situation. And the House of Representatives last week voted to prevent any Guantanamo prisoner being brought to the US mainland for any reason, even to be put on trial. That's going to be judged by the Senate sometime before Christmas, where I would hope that it's thrown out, but it's a sign of how warped and ridiculous the political conversation is in the United States still, that the Senate might actually vote to prevent any Guantanamo prisoner leaving the place to be brought to America, even to be put on trial, which is what the Obama administration wants to do for some of these cases.
And more sad so than usual, I think, that Obama came to power with a promise to close Guantanamo. Now it's been 1 year past, and this was something that he campaigned, and the first thing he signed on is closing of Guantanamo, and Guantanamo isn't closed yet. And Obama promised, and he made lots of sound bites before he came to power about exposing lots of photographs and lots of crimes that were committed in Iraqi prisons and in other locations, secret locations in Guantanamo. When he came to power, those pictures and photographs are so horrendous, and so they will have a very big effect on people. He was prevented, when he saw them probably, to release those pictures, because they know he was advised by his military advisors that if he does release those pictures, they will have even more animosity and more problems for the American soldiers, because there are pictures of rape and pictures of more serious crimes that were committed. And I know, because I know of stories of rape in Guantanamo and other places. And Guantanamo is only one place which has become notorious, but there are more than, there was a study made by Case Prisons, more than 70 secret locations around the world run by CIA or for the CIA in one place or another, where people were held and tortured, and some of them ended up in Guantanamo, some of them were released, some of them weren't released. They're only in Pakistan there's more than 20 lockups run for the CIA and by the CIA. You heard about Morocco, where Binyam was sent. This is a separate lockup funded by the US government, CIA, and run for the CIA. It wasn't like normal Moroccan prisons. They have another place where a Hebrew Israeli newspaper wrote about in Jordan. There were 10 people locked up in a prison called Jaffa, which is, again, locked up. People who had access to it were only a small amount of people who were allowed to go there from the CIA. And there were people, about 10, they said about 10 were locked up in that prison. There were allegations and there were stories, and I met people who investigated from the European Commission, investigated this, and they have proofs, and they met people who worked there in Romania and Poland. They had lockups who were used, and many of those people, who some of them ended up in Guantanamo, some of them have completely disappeared, were locked up in Romania at one stage and Poland. Countries like the island of Garcia, what was it? The island of Garcia, there are boats and ships were used where people were locked up in these ships and tortured before they ended up in Guantanamo, and so on. There are many, many countries involved, and there are many lockups, more than Guantanamo, involved. And the number, yes, 170 are still in Guantanamo, but there are a lot larger number than that in many, many other prisons and secret locations, and probably they are even more abused and mistreated, because the more things are done in the dark, the more people are subjected to more brutality, I think. And I think we should not be distracted by thinking about closing Guantanamo down. Closing Guantanamo down, like what Clive has said in the film, and probably Andy would tell you the same, is like Guantanamo is only a nice, you know, what shows out, but there are larger system of cruelty that exists, that we, I urge you all and myself to campaign and continue to expose and talk about.
Is there a site on the net I could access?
Is there
a site on the net?
A site on the net.
To read about or to see the film or...
Or provide some financial support.
For Omar's Guantanamo Justice Center?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's leaflets here as well for that. We seem to have a lot of leaflets here tonight.
We had a person who just recently was released to Spain. And he's still now, no, he's more than, 4 years released. It's not recent, more than 4 years. He's released to Spain and he hasn't got any funding because why he was released to Spain is that they tried to make him an agent work for them, and that's why he was released to Spain. When he refused to do that, he's finding lots of hardship in Spain until today. He doesn't have any status, he doesn't have any money, nothing, and he was recently evacuated with his wife, his pregnant wife, and he was evacuated to be thrown in the street. All this is pressure being put on him so that he works for the Spanish government. And he refused to do so, and he was evacuated and thrown in the street, and his wife lost her baby because of that, because of the eviction, the fear. And we had to collect about 6,000 before even we got that settlement. We had to dig in our pockets and find out, because nobody was much interested. We had to find between us, collect about 6,000, and then we send that money to him, and we're helping. There's another guy in Chad, I've described before, who was living and sleeping in the streets, in the mosques in Chad, because he doesn't have any... His family in Chad are not his immediate family. His immediate family is in Saudi Arabia, where he most of his life lived. He was, when he was picked up, he was about 14 years old. After 7 years, he was released to a country where he has no connections other than really far away relatives. His relatives were so frightened from having anything to do with him, because he was from Guantanamo. And he... Because most people, when they come out and they face these problems, what they do is that, who can they talk to? They talk to us here in England. We are their inmates, and they think we are a lot better off than they are. Probably we are. But we're not that rich at the time. And they think maybe we can help them, and they come back to us. And we used to, we ask people for help. We used to... It's difficult to find much money because we have... Okay, we had problems ourselves until we thought about setting up Guantanamo Justice Center. Because of that, we have the Guantanamo Justice Center, is that to help many, many other people like that, in conditions like that. And if any contribution, any donation, you can find, it's Guantanamo Justice Center, there are leaflets here, you can find it in the website. We don't only do this, we do other work also. Can find out more about it, and we'd be thankful and grateful if you would give a hand in it.
Yeah, okay.
You two,
we've got to go. I'm afraid
we've got 10 minutes.
Okay, we run. But you can pull in, and
we can carry on
if you like.
We have a film on.
You do. We can't carry on.
Well, can you then go and talk in the bar or upstairs?
Okay. Woman there had a question.
I'm only short for time. I just wanted to say, I can certainly speak for myself and probably for a lot of others. I just wanted to say thank you for coming to join me tonight and sharing such a fantastic piece of work with everybody. I have been actively involved in campaigning for Arthur Siddiqui and Shahid Amir. And I would encourage everybody to visit Cage Prisoners' website and support the campaigns, because our voice is imperative.
Thank you.
Thank you.